Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are Going In Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the only pro wrestling podcast you're going to be listening to right here at youtube.com/ Steven Larson, and anywhere fine podcasts are available. Oh, this is Going In Raw View. I forgot. We're filming this on a Monday. We usually film this on like a Wednesday.
Yeah.
But this is Going In Raw View. This is where we review old wrestling pay-per-views, as voted on by our patrons at patreon.com/ Steven Larson. At the $10 a month and up mark, you get to choose, you get to vote on which pay-per-view we're reviewing here on the show.
We didn't get our three options before we started.
I have three options.
Steve did his three options before
I
we started.
I did the three
it's
options.
Good because it's your turn.
I know, exactly. That's why I chose them. Let's see, I don't have a third one, but I'll figure that out between now and when
and we
finish
to do that
up.
Part of the show. Sounds
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. So if you see me drift off mentally for like 5 minutes, you know what's going on. Y'all's rely on you to keep going. Anyways, this week we are talking about Armageddon 2004. Now, this was one of your options that you put forth.
Yeah.
This is what people voted on. And why did you choose?
Because Kurt Angle wrestles Santa Claus. That sounded ridiculous.
Yeah, and it was. Lasted about a minute. This was, it's so bizarre. So we were looking up before this. So when Paul Heyman took over SmackDown in the summer of 2002, his tenure there as head writer only lasted till February 2003.
Yeah.
However, it was widely hailed as a really good tenure.
Yeah.
I think the ratings didn't like start beating Raw on the ratings,
yeah,
or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, it did.
Well, this is well after that.
Yeah, this is more than a year after he left. Brock Lesnar, by this point, had also left WWE.
Right.
And granted, the main event scene,
mm-hmm,
was packed with talent.
Yeah.
And the mid-card, to a certain extent, kind of was.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a period of time when, you know, this is when John Cena was starting to get popular. Just the following WrestleMania, he would win the WWE title from JBL.
Correct.
Orton was around.
Mm-hmm.
Lesnar had already come and gone.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a whole lot of other younger talent that was brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a lot of them, seem to be tall.
Yes, correct.
Very muscular.
Yes, correct.
And largely devoid of any charisma.
That's correct. This is where you get kind of your, I would say, prototypical Vince McMahon guy.
Yeah.
Just a large men, lots of muscles, blank slate, man. Just
moderate,
a blank slate.
Moderate wrestling skill.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes that's like, yeah, even less than moderate.
Yeah.
Just dead eyes, not a lot of charisma. There were multiple sort of versions of that running through this show. This really felt like a not a very good SmackDown. Like if I imagine SmackDown for the time, because this was a SmackDown exclusive pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned before, JBL was in the middle of his year-long tenure as champion because they really didn't. I mean, Cena hadn't come alive yet.
Yeah, no, but seeing who else was on in the main event scene.
Surprising that he lasted a year.
There was Undertaker, there was Eddie Guerrero, there was Kurt Angle,
mm-hmm,
there was Booker T.
Yeah.
I mean, all of them.
Really weird.
Would, in theory, not even just theory, in practice, make better champions than JBL. I understand wanting to elevate somebody. He filled a very specific role and he did it fairly well.
Yeah.
But Kurt Angle, brilliant heel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Eddie Guerrero, brilliant facer heel. Booker, yeah, T, brilliant.
Yeah.
Undertaker, brilliant. You have all these legendary wrestlers,
mm-hmm,
at the top of your card, and it's weird that JBL held the belt for a year.
Yeah, it is. I was looking, I thought, so was JBL elevated because somebody else was injured?
That I don't know.
I forget. I know somebody, you know, that's happened before. you know, people are injured and somebody else is elevated.
But it's not as if they didn't have other options.
Yeah, I know. I know. Where was Edge at the time? Was he injured?
I think he was on Raw.
Was he on Raw at the time?
Might have been on Raw.
Yeah, I don't know. I know Benoit was on Raw because the previous WrestleMania, him and Guerrero, that's when they both won their respective brands' world titles. So, it was bizarre. And it was kind of, it was interesting because prior to what I assume would be the draft prior to this, you know, you had what was referred to as the SmackDown Six, which was Benoit, Guerrero, Chavo, Edge. Who am I missing?
You're missing two.
I'm missing two and two additionals. I don't know. But it wasn't Undertaker. It wasn't Booker T. Oh, Kurt Angle one of them? Hold on a second. I'm going to look this up. SmackDown 6 was... Oh, here we go. Guerrero, Angle, Edge, Benoit, Rey Mysterio, and Chavo Guerrero. Paul Heyman had used package those guys together to sort of, you know, really push the main event scene and make main event players out of a couple of those guys. So... this was after that. Benoit had been taken away by the draft. Maybe Edge had. I'm not. Maybe or Edge could have been nursing an injury or something. Rey Mysterio was still around, but they had him tag teaming with RVD. RVD, who, by the way, could have, you know, became in less than a year from this a main event player of his own.
Mm-hmm.
This was late 2004.
Yeah. It was actually more than a year because it was 2006 that he got the belt.
Oh, it wasn't 2005? Okay.
No, it was 2006.
Okay.
So about a year and a half from this.
Okay. So, yeah, it was weird. Like you said, there was Booker T, there was Undertaker, you know, there was
Eddie,
good talent
there. Well, there was great talent, legendary talent.
Yeah.
And then they put the belt on JBL for a year.
But when you have, so when you go from that SmackDown 6 where everybody's always putting on amazing matches, you bring in JBL, he's not going to give you an amazing match. Sometimes he'll give you a very bloody match,
yes,
which makes for very entertaining television.
The main event for this show was fun enough.
Yeah, it was. And then the air got sucked out of the room when Heidenreich showed up. But let's start off at the beginning.
First, I want to talk about the set. That was an awesome set.
Yeah, it really was. When there's an ongoing fire, when you have your logo on fire constantly throughout the show, it's pretty awesome.
Here's something I noticed.
Okay.
And this is pure coincidence, I'm sure. So I was looking at the Armageddon logo, and it's like, that looks a lot like the God of War, the video game logo.
Oh, yeah.
And so I looked into it. The God of War game came out like 3 months after the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting anything fishy going on, like somebody ripped somebody off. Not at all.
Well, no. Hold, this was actually, I think this was sponsored by...
PlayStation, it was.
Yeah.
So there could have been some crossover, but okay, I looked, and years previous, they used the same logo.
Oh, okay.
So this is just funny, because I thought the first God of War game came out earlier. I was like, oh, wow, WWE just straight ripped off the God of War logo.
Yeah.
They didn't.
This was weird. According to Wikipedia, the attendance was 5,000.
It looked like a smaller arena because they said it was Atlanta. I was expecting it to be at the Phillips Arena where the Hawks play, but it wasn't. It was at the arena.
Gwinnett Center.
Yeah, the arena at Gwinnett Center.
Yeah. Well, they said Atlanta. That's Duluth.
Oh.
That's actually it
must be a
Duluth.
Suburb.
Yeah. But anyways, the pay-per-view kicked off with RVD and Rey Mysterio. I totally forgot these guys not only were a tag team, they held tag team gold. Had no idea.
They had won the belts the previous SmackDown.
How long are they? Do you know how long they lasted as a tag team?
I mean,
here's the funny thing is that you put RVD. This is weird. This is like a dream team, but either they weren't together long enough to be memorable as a tag team, or, and I think this is, I have a suspicion this is more the case, both these guys knew they were well beyond being in a tag team because they did plenty of like cool combo moves. Like they had that 420 leg drop, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like those guys put those moves together in their sleep.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't really seem all... Their tag team didn't seem that inspired.
Yeah.
You know, some guys, when they're thrown together as a tag team, they have instant chemistry.
Yeah.
These guys, I just... It felt like RVD was like, you know what? This isn't me and Sabu. I really should be further up the card. I should be, you know, I can put on the five-star matches. Rey Mysterio might have felt the same way. I have no idea how they felt. This feels like a holding pattern for two guys who were like enormously talented, and yet they still had the tag team titles.
Yeah, I know.
Who'd they fight?
Rene Dupree and Kenzo Suzuki. I was not that familiar with Kenzo Suzuki's work, so I looked them up.
Yeah, me too.
You have some notes there, a few. One I found most interesting was that he won the Young Lions Cup twice in New Japan.
Oh.
And the second time he won it, he defeated Tanahashi to win it, and then later tagged with him.
Interesting. I found out that he was originally scheduled to debut on the Raw brand under the ring name Hirohito, a Japanese patriot who held anti-American views. They just can't get away from the anti-American heel, can they? They just can never let that one go. It's a new day that we're in now, and they're still doing that same thing. Anyways. this was actually a better match than I would have figured. Rene Dupree, who is, you know what? Hey, he was a big dude with a lot of muscles and not a ton of charisma, but at least he did the little French dance thing. At least, you know what? At least they said, hey, you're going to be a French dude. So, and he went all in on that.
Yeah. Like, he showed more personality than pretty much any of the other younger talent.
We'll get to them in a bit. But they did some, I mean, you could tell these guys were both, Rene Dupree and Kenzo, I could tell they were making the most of their opportunities.
Yes.
They really were.
Yes.
They fell short, but there was a bunch of cool spots here. There was this cool, there was a good bit with a sunset flip attempt that Rey Mysterio was trying to hit on Kenzo. And then Rob Van Dam got up on the turnbuckle and gave the kick assist for the sunset flip powerbomb there. There was a spinning leg drop across the barricade. So one of the, I think it was Rene Dupree, maybe?
Yeah.
Strewn over the barricade. Rob Van Dam did the spinning heel kick. That's always fun to see. There was a cool neck breaker across the top rope that the heels hit on Mysterio.
Yeah.
That was cool. There was a bunch of cool little bits in there.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad match. They gave it plenty of time. I think it was about 18 minutes.
At one point, Torrey Wilson comes sprinting out. So we didn't get, like, I don't think we got like a video package explaining.
No, the commentary team said something like RVD and Rey Mysterio helped her out at some point. So she was helping them out.
So she chased off Hiroku, I believe was the name of the valet of Kenzo Suzuki. I think they were like a real life item too.
Yeah.
So anyway, she goes running off because she was trying to, you know, do some shenanigans. There were some USA chants I noticed. And I'm pretty sure that was when Suzuki was fighting Rey Mysterio. Where's Rey Mysterio Jr. from?
I thought he built
was he from the 619?
Yeah, that's San Diego.
Okay, yeah, right.
I thought he was billed from San Diego.
Okay, let's see here. Was he actually born in?
He was born in Chula Vista, California.
Oh, there you go. Right on. Well, USA. USA. Good for them. Anyways.
RVD hit a 5-star frog splash on Rene Dupree to get the win.
Yeah, here's one thing, though. Like, before that, when I mentioned Rene Dupree had one of the guys down, one of his opponents down, and he started to do the little French thing, well, Kenzo on the outside started to do it too. And that was cool. You know what? At least these guys are giving the most that they can.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, like you said, RVD, he gets a hot tag, comes in, cleans house, gets the win. Next up, we had a promo for Dixie Dogfight. This was Tough Enough Season 4.
$1 million prize.
That's right. That according to Daniel Pewter, he saw 250,000 of that. I imagine the $1 million would be like a contract, assuming you don't get released from it. So he said he's not about a $250,000 from that. So this was, it was down to him and The Miz.
Mm-hmm. They were the final two.
I love that during the promo later, we saw that Ryback was.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I'm Ryan Reeves. Anyways, Daniel Pewter, he gave a promo.
If you want to call it that.
Oh, you know what's funny, though? You can learn how to do that. That kid looked great.
Yeah, he had a good look, but it was a horrible promo.
It was
it was horrible.
Well, here's the thing, though. I guarantee you, they said, hey, you know what? This is your opportunity. We're doing it either live or live to tape. You get one chance. And so, you know, it's not that he didn't have a chance to go back and redo.
Well, I mean, that's how you're going to do it if you're.
I know. I'm just saying.
SmackDown, so.
Just saying, you know, they're not polished, but it was bad.
It was really bad.
It was really, really bad.
I mean, when The Miz did his promo.
Oh, you could tell. He was, yeah.
It wasn't good.
Yeah.
But you could tell there was ingredients there that he could be good.
Daniel Pewter
was not good.
Yeah.
He was stumbled over his words several times.
They should have made him the pewterized man of the 1990s.
There you go. The computerized man.
The computerized man.
Of the 2000s.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what he said. Dollars.
His catchphrase was snap, crackle, and pop. He said that later.
Oh, that he just liked Rice Krispies.
no, because he was saying after he won how this he's an MMA fighter, so he fights.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That was a boxing match.
Yeah.
And snap, crackle, and pop.
Right. You're supposed to insinuate he means he gets you
joints,
removed.
Yes.
Joints,
bones, joints. Body parts, yes.
He didn't set it up. No. He just went. He stumbled a lot, and then he just went straight for the punchline.
It was more of an impressionistic approach to the promos. He would just toss some words and sentence fragments together, and hope the audience.
It's left
the point.
Up to interpretation.
Yes. Exactly. It was an avant-garde promo, maybe.
No, I have in the note here. It said it reminded me of Dirk Diggler, but even Dirk Diggler was a bit more fluid.
Yeah.
You know. Oh God! He was. You know what? He was trying so hard, though. He was so earnest.
Oh, I know he was. He was trying hard.
He was so earnest.
And as you said, he had a good look. I didn't see any of his matches in WWE.
No, me neither. Me neither.
It's weird that they had a reality show determine a new wrestler, determined in part by a boxing match.
Oh, I know. You know what's weird too? If you think about it, what does the WWE try to emulate these days?
MMA.
Right. If maybe he was just born like 10 years too early.
Could be.
Because if you bring that guy in now, you put him in the performance center, you send him on the NXT house show circuit, then they're like, hey, let's show all the nuts and bolts. Let's show all the gross shit. Let's show you how you make hot dogs, you know?
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to see ugly promos.
No.
If it was today, Daniel Pewter would definitely be the computerized man of the 1990s. Anyways, after that, Kurt Angle comes down and he calls out his mystery opponent. Turns out to be Santa Claus. Kurt Angle is upset because when he gets home to see his daughter after a long road trip, his daughter isn't talking about wanting to see Kurt Angle. She's talking about wanting to see Santa Claus.
Yep.
Santa Claus. And so he's pissed off about this. Apparently, Santa Claus is actually Cliff Compton, a.k.a. Domino.
Oh, that's who it was?
So I think, wasn't Deuce the guy who The Undertaker didn't fall on but was supposed to?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
this is the other part of that duo. I was barely watching when Deuce and Domino were
this whole
were
period
anything.
I really wasn't watching at all.
Yeah. Angle was such a stud, though.
Oh, yeah, he
My
was.
My God, he was such a stud.
So Pewter lasted less than a year in the WWE after Armageddon. He was gone in September 2005.
Well, he didn't win over any fans in the company because he almost snapped Kurt Angle's arm legitimately. Kurt Angle says that he was all he said he broke his neck four times during his run in WWE, and he said he was just coming off, so he had like no upper body strength when they did that thing. But again, that's really stupid. It's like, number one, if you're Pewter, don't you know probably not a great idea for me to embarrass Kurt Angle legit?
I know.
And number two, at Gorilla Position, whoever's producing that says, hey, listen, kid, come here. If, for whatever reason, you get Angle in a compromising position, you need to back off and make it look good. You know what I mean? Like, dude, he's you're out there with Kurt. Like, it's supposed to be scripted. It's supposed to be predetermined. Can't be just throwing people out there.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah, he went into developmental after this.
Just for a little bit. And they gave an option of transferring to Deep South Wrestling for less pay.
Yeah, he said the pay was really ridiculous. Yeah, and he said he didn't like the atmosphere there. I looked into it a little bit. Then Santa Claus comes down. Kurt Angle runs him down, says he don't like him, says you make real heroes look bad, and then he challenged him to a fight, and basically pretty quickly got him in the ankle lock, and Santa Claus tapped out.
Yeah.
Santa Claus's gray wig went flying off too. And so people were saying, some people on the line were saying, I think this is Regal, and it kind of had a Regal look, but then when he was actually tapping out, you could see more of his face, and I looked up that Cliff Compton guy, and I was like,
that wasn't Regal. I didn't think it was Regal.
No.
After that, we had the Miz promo we talked about a little bit before.
Do you like how he ended it with, eat it?
Yeah.
That fool took it. He stole from Grimm, assuming Grimm was doing that 17 years ago, or 12 years ago, whenever it was, 13 years ago. He said, eat it, yeah. But yeah, like you said, Miz, he kind of had the ingredients already.
Yeah,
he didn't look as good as Daniel Computerized Man, but he
was more captivating on screen.
He was, yeah, and his promo was just better. Anyways,
and that led to Teddy Long comes out.
But along with that, we had the Tough Enough promo, and I was trying to look up everybody else. One of the guys, I think his name was Juice something. I think he was one of the New American Gladiators.
Oh.
He went on to do that. But yeah, Ryan Reeves, Ryback was one of them with hair. It was weird. Yeah. And he still sounded.
Oh, no, the exact same.
Exactly. I'm right.
Well, we said, no one here wants this more than I do.
Exactly. No one here wants to eat more than I do. I can't wait till I'm done with this company. I'm going to start a podcast.
Nobody in a line of nutritional products and write a self-help book and self-publish it.
Nobody here knows what a podcast is, but it's kind of like radio, but on the internet.
Then yeah. Teddy Long comes out to explain the rules of the Dixie Dog Fight. So it's pretty much just a boxing match.
It's a boxing match.
Pretty much just a boxing match. Between two gentlemen, two competitors who don't box.
A, this should have been bare knuckle. B, barring that, which I know is illegal, they should have taken the stupid like sparring hats off, sparring helmets off. Like, come on! What's going to happen?
Let me
get somebody get knocked out.
Considering Kurt Angle almost got his arm broken a few weeks prior to this, it's probably a good idea they had the
for the Miz,
on.
Maybe. Yeah,
I was reading up on that too. Apparently, Angle broke the ribs of one of the other.
Competitors. Yeah, because they were putting them through the. It was so...
They were doing shoot wrestling matches. That's what it was. That's how. Pewter almost broke Kurt Angle's arm because it was a shoot thing.
Oh, man. Hey, you say shoot. This is real. I'm about to make a name for myself.
Yep.
Because on the flip side, play devil's advocate for computerized man. You say shoot. Oh, man, I can get over on Kurt Angle? Who wouldn't sign me? You know?
Yeah.
Like, you got to think, maybe he's thinking, this is going to keep some options open if I break Kurt Angle's arm on live TV.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, probably not a great idea.
No, not a good idea. So, yeah, Dixie Dogfight happened. Al Snow was on commentary. He was the head coach for Tough Enough.
Very serious, Al Snow.
Yes.
Very serious. What does everybody want?
It was 3 1-minute rounds. No real boxing skill showed.
So, It was forever. Just wild swinging, grabbing onto each other.
Yep.
Oh, so bad.
At least The Miz showed some passion.
Yeah, I know.
He came out there. He blew himself up the first round.
He did.
Just expending all his energy.
He really did. It's how I imagined Hilton would do in this.
Oh, yes.
In this thing. But anyways,
of course, there's no knockouts,
right? Yeah,
because they don't know how to box. So Pewter won by fan decision.
You know what's funny is that it's really easy to say that, but like, and everybody thinks that, man, if I went into a boxing match, I'd just be doing this shit the whole time.
Oh no, I know I wouldn't. Everybody wants to be like Rocky. We're just throwing haymaker after haymaker. That's what people want it to be.
Exactly. But I'd probably be much worse.
Yeah.
Like if you and I got into a boxing, we got our big helmets on.
You know,
on, so
you know,
each other.
In 2K17, the taunt of Seth Rollins moshing. That's how I'd be.
Exactly.
That is how I would be. The crowd started booing during this boxing match.
Yeah, because they paid money to go see that.
And you know, the crowd was actually pretty hot for the tag match that opened the show.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of into the Kurt Angle Santa Claus thing because at least it was short.
Yeah, it was short.
This Dixie Dog fight sucked the air completely out of the arena and never really came back until the main event.
Exactly. Next up we had, Pewter won that, by the way, because didn't like Teddy Long said, he said nobody won, but we're going to take it to the crowd.
Yeah, it's a fan vote. Yeah,
the fan vote.
This is the winner of this fight by fan decision.
Yeah.
Daniel Computerized Man.
That's legit. Next up, we had Eddie Guerrero and Booker T backstage. It's just fantastic. You can sit there and watch these guys talk about absolutely nothing, and it's vastly entertaining. So they're talking about how, you know, Eddie says, you know, I could just pin you really quick and win the title. And Booker says, I could do the same thing to you. And then they're talking shit about The Undertaker, and The Undertaker shows up, and they both freak out. It's fantastic.
It's great.
It's great. Eddie Guerrero is a gem, and so is Booker T.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we had a couple guys called the Basham Brothers.
Speaking of muscular wrestlers, not a ton of charisma.
Apparently, they were part of JBL's cabinet.
Yep. They were the co-secretaries of defense.
Yeah, there you go. I liked the other dude. I liked Orlando.
Jordan?
Jordan, yeah. He was good.
Yeah,
he had
good.
A good face on him.
Yeah, he did.
He had one of them charisma faces.
Yeah.
And they were taking on Hardcore Holly. And
Charlie Haas.
Freaking, I love Charlie Haas.
Yeah, he was good.
I even, in the terrible, terrible, awful segment with Jackie Gata, who, by the way, he's still married to, and Dawn Marie, Charlie Haas still was cracking me up.
Yeah.
Because he's got that, God, what, like, just that meathead look. But it's like character. It's more like a David Putty meathead. It's not like a charisma-less meathead.
Yeah, no, I know.
And
what you
we
mean.
All knew that Charlie Haas could wrestle. Yeah. You know, like he was on.
Yeah, he had the pedigree. He was went to Seton Hall, they said.
Yeah. And then he ended up in Ring of Honor, and it was totally legit. Like he was a really good wrestler.
Yeah. When the Basham brothers came out, I thought a game show was starting because their theme song sounded like a game show.
Oh my god, it did! That's right, it did. And then, of course, Hardcore Holly is in there thinking it's all real.
I know. There were boring chants during this match.
Was that you or the crowd?
No,
also?
The crowd.
Because I know I was chanting that.
But they said during the match, like right when it started, it's like, oh, this is an unannounced put together match.
Yeah.
We need another match to fill out the time on the card. So there was no build to this match, so no one cared.
Yeah. What? So was Hardcore Holly and Charlie Haas an actual tag team at the time?
I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, again, like there's no video.
But if they were, they probably weren't after this match.
Yeah, well, there was a video package for the Cena stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember a video package for the Big Show, Jindrak, Luther Reigns stuff.
Oh, the Brock Lesnar cosplayer?
Yes. Oh, man. So anyways, this match sucked.
Don Marie comes out. Ringside while Charlie Haas is on the outside, because the storyline going on is that Charlie Haas and Miss Jackie are engaged.
Correct.
But Dawn Marie is starting rumors that herself and Charlie have been having an affair.
Right, exactly.
So Dawn Marie comes out to help Charlie Haas after he gets thrown out of the ring. Miss Jackie comes out to get between them. Charlie Haas is dealing with all that.
While Dad is in the ring yelling at
Hardcore
Charlie
Holly
Haas.
Gets distracted. And the Bashams, I don't know which one, pick up the win by rolling up Hardcore Holly. Then afterwards, Charlie Haas comes to the ring and Hardcore Holly just yells at him like he's a tough enough competitor.
Again, Hardcore Holly, I think he thought it was real.
Yeah, maybe.
Why didn't Charlie Haas show up in the In Your Haas tournament that
That's
we had?
That's a good point. Well, it's not.
Should he? I mean, talk about prime
Haas. He needs to put on like 150 pounds and then spell his last name differently.
Dude, if your last name is Haas.
It's different spelling, though.
You're in. I say you're in.
It's a different spelling, man.
Yeah. Anyways.
Next, we had a John Cena, Carlito, and Jesus video package.
Oh, this is great. Because I like it because so the story in storyline, John Cena was at some gentleman's club or a nightclub or something.
Well, they call it an after-hours club, but they had a bunch of stripper B-rolls.
They showed stripper B-rolls. So
it was a strip club, yeah.
He's hanging out there with like Enzo Amore. And apparently he was shanked by Jesus.
Yes.
Who I'm trying to remember exactly where I knew him from. I'm pretty sure it was those old shows that me and Evald used to go to.
Yeah, he said
in the day.
He's the hardcore kid, right? On Wikipedia, that's what said one of his.
Yeah.
Other names
but I don't remember if he was in XPW or if he was in the other shows that we used to go to. But I remember, and then I remember tripping out because I was like, oh, wait a second. I've seen that guy live before. And it was sad because good looking dude.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I know he got injured and released. But kind of a bummer that, like, they never reapproached him or anything. I don't know what the story is there, but, man, I thought that he had a really great look. And I loved Carlito at this point. Like, I remember really enjoying, like, the whole Carlito thing. And I remember this was, like, weird because it was, like, they were acting like it was real and it was taking place, like, off camera and stuff. And Cena got stabbed. It wasn't like they had cameras at the After Hours Club.
No, it was you know, like, stock footage B-roll of strip club.
Exactly. So the idea that Cena got stabbed, like, in his kidney.
Yeah.
And then had to go through surgery. It was all weird. So this was a street fight between Jesus, who's coming out there with Carlito.
And John Cena.
And John Cena, who was hugely over at the time.
This was all in the build-up to him winning the title from JBL at WrestleMania. Carlito was selling a shoulder injury.
Right.
He suffered at the hands of John Cena.
Yeah.
And this show also marked the debut of the Spinner U.S.
That's
title.
That's right. Taz and Michael Cole marked out big time for the U.S. Spinner belt. That was an ugly title.
Yes.
The later WWE version with the spinner on it, I think that was better.
Yeah, it was.
That was a lot better, especially when you just put it into place. It just looks like a really good belt.
I know.
But that U.S. title, like the font where it says U.S., didn't you say USA? It said like U.S. on the front.
Yeah, it wasn't
so
a good belt.
So ugly.
It was not a good belt.
Yeah, and it was smaller. Yeah, it was ugly. But anyways, match was whatever. Like
it was
went,
pretty much a squash match.
Yeah, it was. It went out into the crowd. They brawled outside the ring a lot.
Yeah,
there was a kendo stick.
Jesus. Yeah. Yeah, Carlito throws a kendo stick into the ring, and Jesus hits Cena with it once in the kidney. Cena no-sells, grabs the stick, and then hits Jesus across the head twice with it. Yeah.
Oh,
they
Cena.
Were not pulling their shots back then.
No, they were not.
Definitely not, because there's this one spot where Jesus is over the barricade. He's, I don't know if it's real or not, but he's bleeding in the crowd. And it looks like Cena just shoot kicks him right in the head.
Yeah.
And then later on, I mean, granted, it's a garbage can lid. That's pretty flimsy. But the street sign,
yeah,
that's got a little more weight to it.
Yeah.
Just bent it over Jesus' head.
Yeah. That's why he's like, screw this.
I know. So Cena, of course, wins clean with an FU.
Yeah.
Gets his chain back, too.
I just really like that, like, during the video package of this, it was showing, like, Teddy Long was investigating Cena getting stabbed at a strip club. I'm like, it's probably, like, a matter for cops.
Yeah, it's a police matter, I would think.
Not Teddy Long. Just run your show, Teddy Long. He also had the Ruck Fools shirt on, which at the time I thought I remember it being cool, but now you look at him like, that's number A, is a terrible font. B, I don't even, it doesn't even make sense.
No. I did like his Word Life hoodie he wore in the video package.
Oh, I know, me too. Like, I was thinking if he ever actually wrestled in that, that is the comfiest shit, because he had the visor too.
Yeah.
I remember thinking like that visor looked cool, and I kind of wish that visors were more like in.
Yeah.
Wish I could wear a visor and not be laughed at, because I like visors.
Really?
Well, here's the thing about
play softball. You can wear visors if you play softball.
Yeah, but then I have to wear them. Like, I can only wear them when I'm playing, so I can't.
No, not necessarily. Because if you go out and you wear a visor, and people are like, "Oh, what's with the visor? I'm going to play softball."
They're like, "It's raining outside."
Well, I mean, if it clears up, I'm playing softball. Just say that.
If it clears up, it's scheduled.
We
for
got
like
a game scheduled
at
7 o'clock, so I'm going out running my errands before the game.
It's supposed to clear up.
I'll go to the field. If it clears up and the field dries out enough, we're playing softball.
Exactly. We're playing softball.
Become the Sid of going in Raw.
Did you like,
dedicate your life,
you like
to softball.
How giant Cena's jorts were, too.
Oh, I know.
He was swimming in them, dude. What the heck? Those were horrible.
I wish he would go back to
and
wearing...
He looked all grungy.
I wish he would go back to wearing the retro the shoes, though. I liked when he was wearing pumps and Jordans and stuff.
Oh, man. I just love when he was wearing jerseys.
Yeah.
That was rad. He looked cool. He looked cool as crap. Oh, man. I know. And it's like he's all edgy and like he's got like fire, you know? He's like really kicking people and shit. Mm-hmm. And he's still burying people, but like he's got like, and nowadays he
was even Super Cena back then.
I know he was. Oh, John, we're going to put him in Vince's bag. I like this kid. He's no selling everything.
Take a kendo shot to the kidney and no sell it.
Another fucking hand. Like somebody tweeted at the, talking about no selling. So somebody tweeted at the Young Bucks the other day, and they said, if you were to fight the Revival, how would you counter their something something offense? And he says, we would no sell them.
That was great. I chuckled at that too.
That's fools. Oh, man.
Next, we had Miss Jackie and Charlie Haas backstage. They were talking about the status of their relationship.
Yeah.
Charlie Haas was changing into his referee gear because he was refereeing a match between Dawn Marie and Miss Jackie.
A match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the process of this conversation, Miss Jackie gave Charlie Haas her engagement ring.
Right.
That will come into play later on.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
Yes.
Yeah. They proceed to make out. Like,
oh, yeah.
Full tongue. Ugh. Well, there's still a couple, but like it's... If you're on TV and the camera's like right here in your face, I don't want to see muscles in your tongue shit. He's all...
That was gross.
It was so... And then like starts to walk away and he like his giant bear mitt.
Oh, yeah.
He like slaps her butthole.
Yeah.
He's like, you look great or something like that. Yeah, you're great. Hey, Jackie, you're great. He goes out there. Oh, man. Wait, was their match...
There, it was next, yeah.
Theirs was next. Where's the rest of my notes? Oh, well.
Apparently, you don't have any.
All right. Oh, yeah. No, because here's my only note for this. Did they even train women's wrestlers back then?
Oh, this was awful. The match
this
quality
was
horrible.
Awful.
It was awful.
This was terrible. And it only lasts like, I think this was like the actual match.
About a
was
minute.
Like a minute and change.
Yeah.
But it was really bad.
It was really bad.
Dawn Marie got a roll up, kind of?
Yeah. And Charlie Haas, she had a handful of tights.
Oh, yeah.
And Charlie Haas counted the pin. Dawn Marie is the winner, of course.
But that was all just prelude to what happened next.
Of course, Miss Jackie was upset because her fiance just counted the pinfall. Like, you know, hey.
You just rammed your tongue into my mouth.
Yeah.
I should get at least get a two count there.
Yeah, at least get a slow count or something. Give me a slow count, exactly. To kick out.
Yeah.
So Charlie grabs the mic and confirms
he
is having an affair with Dawn Marie and calls off his engagement with Miss Jackie.
He said it's done, and he has the ring. And then he holds out the ring to Dawn Marie. He says, Dawn Marie, why are you such a slut? Whoa, double standards galore. Can't do that these days. But Charlie Haas did it. And then he said, I'm done with both of you. I mean, I fully expected. He was like, why don't you kiss each other? I'm out of here. And I totally figured this is going to end in a threesome. I honestly thought they were all going to just drop trow and have a threesome there live for the crowd. But then I would have like known about that going into this.
Yeah, we would have heard about that.
Yeah. So he just storms off. And so we're kind of left confused, like, wait, so you don't even want a girlfriend? Like, you don't want any of them?
Well, he said to Jackie, I love you.
I'm not in love
with
you.
But I'm not in love with you.
He had a big smile on his face when he said that, too. Like, he was the man who invented that phrase. So he walked away with nobody, with nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, Charlie, well, evidently it's easy enough for you to pull.
Yeah.
Evidently you have other options. Like, Big Show had Joy Giovanni, apparently.
Yeah. He was walking backstage and runs into Joy Giovanni and she kisses him.
Yeah. I didn't. The only thing I knew about Joy Giovanni is that
she was on this calendar.
I don't remember her. Now that I've seen Armageddon 2004, I won't remember her past this review.
Unless we start watching a lot more stuff from 2004.
I don't want to do that.
No.
If this was any indication.
Yeah.
Big Show had a beef with, I guess, Kurt Angle?
Yeah. And then this was after Team Angle.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas at his side. Like,
yeah.
He had Mark Jindrak. He used to be one half of a tag team with Sean O'Hare.
And one of the Natural Born Thrillers.
Yeah. And Luther Reigns, who I know nothing about, except he wore the same exact ring gear as Brock Lesnar and he had a similar haircut.
Yeah. But so he was like a brunette.
Yeah, he looked to me like a Brock Lesnar cosplayer.
Yeah, no, he totally was.
Especially because this was after Lesnar had already left.
Yeah. Luther Reigns, I don't know anything about him. He didn't do anything that was memorable. You know, usually if there's, okay, for example, like Jesus, right? His Wikipedia page. He looks so confused right there. And that's from 11 years ago. Oh, no.
2008, 9 years
ago.
Yeah,
9 years ago. Oh, that's great. Where did he end up?
Retirement.
Oh, man. Look at that. But yeah, so like, okay, for example, Jesus. You take one look at that kid. And you're like, oh, wow, like that dude, he looks cool. He's got a good look to him. I wouldn't mind seeing him do more things.
Yeah.
Luther Reigns, you take one look at him and you see like generic, like 99-cent store pro wrestling action figure. Like you go there and it's got like Wrestling All-Stars or something like that. And it's like, you know, a recolored version of Brock Lesnar action figure. What did he end up doing? Anything?
He wrestled for Scott Norton's Wild West Championship Wrestling promotion, where he took on, I think this is Jesus.
That sounds like a creator wrestler.
Yep, that's Jesus.
Oh, nice.
So Aaron Aguilera.
Aguilera.
And also Heidenreich showed up in Wild West Championship Wrestling.
SmackDown 2004 All-Stars.
He was in some movies. There. He was in The Girl Next Door.
Oh, I can't remember him from that.
He was in some television shows, an episode of CSI from 2009.
I like that he was in a movie called Spring Break 83 as a character named Horseshoe.
Oh, it sounds like he's part of the concussion lawsuit that was
dismissed, okay.
I think.
No wonder he left. He was like John Cena's backstage killing everybody with road signs and Vince isn't doing anything about it. You're fired.
So yeah, this was a 3-on-1 handicap match. So Kurt Angle, Mark Jindrak, and Luther Reigns take on
At least Jindrak, like he had good muscles and he had no problem. Like that was sort of his thing. He would just go in there and he'd say,
"Yeah." Huh? He did the Rick Rude dance once.
He did the Rick Rude dance. He was like an amalgam of all those sort of beefy, more charismatic wrestlers.
Yeah.
Who won this? I don't even know what happened in the end.
In the end, oh yeah, Big Show pins Jindrak after an F5.
Boy, they were really. They were really going after that Brock crowd then, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
He might not be here, but we can get guys that look vaguely like him or at least dress like him.
And then just tell other wrestlers to do his moves.
Yeah. You're looking at Sean O'Hare, not Mark Jindrak.
Yeah, I know. But they were tag team partners in WCW.
Yeah, they're part of the Natural Born Thrillers.
So I was just trying to see when they were no longer partners. That's it.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Anyways.
Yeah.
I'll do that later. Next, Funaki interviewed Funaki.
Oh, yeah. SmackDown number one announcer Funaki, who had a Cruiserweight Championship shot against heel Spike Dudley.
It was weird seeing him with no shirt on.
Oh, I know.
I'm so used to him wearing the tie-dye shirt and the jean shorts.
Jean shorts are the overalls.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, overalls. Yeah.
Yeah, but he was all like, and he's not, he wasn't like, what do they used to call him in ECW? Like the runt of the litter or something like that? He was all like articulate and stuff. Well, Spike Dudley, he was like a teacher.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That sounds right.
He was all articulate and stuff. That Cruiserweight belt looked great.
Yeah, it did.
It was a really good looking belt.
It was a good looking belt.
And basically they traded back and forth. Funaki had that one little moment. So he was like usually comedy. But then when Spike asked him, like, you know, how do you think you're going to beat me? And Funaki said, he says, do you have any questions for me? He says, yeah. He said, who's there? And or he said, knock, knock. And he said, who's there? He says, Armageddon. He said, Armageddon who? He says, Armageddon, your title from you. But he said it with like some passion. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Anyways, they had that match up next.
Yeah.
And it was weird. Even like the WCW Cruiserweights in the late 90s, like, moved like Cruiserweights. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. Like, they, mm-hmm. Bischoff, to his credit, brought them in.
Let them wrestle their style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do what you can do. Yeah. But even back then, like, Funaki and Spike Dudley, they wrestled a regular WWE match.
I know.
They were just smaller. They just did a regular match.
I know.
What the hell?
I know. There was at one point where Spike almost landed right in his head when he was trying to do, like, a sunset flip.
Yeah.
Towards the finish, right? Yeah. Right before the finish, which saw Funaki. Mm-hmm. Win the title with a roll-up.
Shocking Funaki and Spike Dudley and nobody else. The crowd was dead by the end of this. They were like, you know.
It was really the Dixie dog fight that took everybody out of the show.
Yeah, it really did. It really did. Next up was the, I'm looking at your
JBL notes. In the locker room, like
with
clutching,
his cabinet. Yeah.
Clutching the championship title.
Yeah.
Because he has to face three other men in the main event to defend his belt. In comes the Basham brothers.
Mm-hmm.
They say stuff to him. In comes Amy Weber.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you got her name.
Said stuff to him.
Mm-hmm.
In comes Orlando Jordan. So they're all more like saying in kind of hushed tones, you know, you got this, but if not, we're still here for you.
Yeah, it's all very sort of depressing. Like,
yeah.
They're all like, you're probably going to lose.
I kind of feel like JBL is actually kind of overselling that aspect of it.
Yeah, I know, me too.
Especially when he walked out for the match.
Yeah.
It looked like he was on the verge of tears.
Because I don't remember him ever. I mean, I wasn't like paying full attention the entire time, but like they even made a note of that. And I get they were trying to sell. They were trying to sell the weight of it,
and that the belt meant so much for him.
Mm-hmm,
but
it,
you know, as a heel, it almost made him sympathetic.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But
there was a pretty cool video package that highlighted the whole
mm-hmm.
feud leading up to this.
Yeah. And this was a really fun match. The only time that the crowd stopped caring was when Heidenreich showed up. Otherwise, this was a lot of fun from like start to finish, and the crowd was actually really into it.
Yeah.
So there were some good bits. Booker T.
Kicks everybody.
Kicking everybody.
Hits Eddie Guerrero with a scissors kick, but Eddie kicks out at two. JBL powerbombs Booker T onto a table. He's probably supposed to go through.
Yeah.
But he didn't. JBL elbows Booker T, sending him through the table.
Yep.
And then shortly after that, Undertaker gives JBL a last ride through the other announce table.
That looked pretty brutal.
Yeah. There's this great spot where Eddie hits two frog splashes on the Undertaker, goes for the pin. Undertaker kicks out at two and then sits right back up.
That was great.
Well, then right after that, Eddie got a huge ladder, climbs the top, and does another frog splash.
Yeah.
Off that. Sells knee injury, takes him a while to get the pin. He goes for it. Undertaker kicks out again.
Yeah. God, Eddie was so good. Like, all of his... He was so well-defined as a character, not just outside of the ring, but inside of the ring. Like, you can always... He's always the crafty one.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He's the crafty one. It's so much fun to watch him. And then, yeah, like, for that spot, like, he hits one frog splash, gets right up, hops to the other corner. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Crowd's going crazy. Hits the second one. Crowd goes like crazy when Undertaker kicks out because that was crazy.
Yeah, and then sits right up.
Saying crazy a lot right now.
I know.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Booker T hits JBL with a scissor kick.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker comes in, breaks up that pinfall. Then the Undertaker just choke slams everybody.
Yeah.
And at that point, yes, Heidenreich comes in and starts attacking the Undertaker.
Again, large man. Lots of muscles, very tall, completely devoid of charisma. I vaguely remember, dude, this is what I remember from that era is all these big, boring guys. And I'm like, why am I watching this shit?
Yeah. So dumb. And they're just kind of using these, you know, I guess they're hoping, you know, in some cases they are salacious storylines to sell the product as opposed to compelling characters.
Yeah.
Good action in the ring.
Because if you're going to go with like salacious storylines, it's like, either go full Attitude Era or don't. You know, it's like they half-assed the hell out of it.
Well, how many angles on this show were involving, like, love interests?
Oh, I know.
In some capacity.
Or Santa Claus.
Yeah, at least two, three?
I mean, Big Show got kissed by Joy
Giovanni. Yeah, the whole Don Marie, Miss Jackie, Charlie Haas love triangle thing.
John Cena and strippers thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Tori Wilson did the run-in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's like, rather than come up with interesting characters and putting on good matches, the main event was a good match, the opening match was a good match.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than just focusing on that, especially when you have that kind of talent, when you have Booker T, Eddie Guerrero, Undertaker, yeah. Kurt Angle, Rob Van Dam, Rey Mysterio. Really, 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 really good wrestlers.
Yeah, Rob Van Dam and Rey Mysterio are opening the show as a tag team.
I know. And they're all really well-defined, really interesting characters.
Yeah, I know.
Focus on that, and I think that's probably why Heyman's tenure on SmackDown was so successful. Mm-hmm. He focused on wrestling and characters.
Yep, exactly.
And didn't worry about soap opera over the top storylines. Yeah, exactly. And it seems like after he left, they just went right back to that.
Yep.
Anyways.
Heidenreich attacks Undertaker, makes his point, leaves. JBL at one point was trying to go for a pin on everybody, and everybody was kicking out. Eventually, he ends up with a clothesline from hell on Booker T and retains his WWE Championship.
Yep.
At this time, the WWE Championship, if I recall, was considered the secondary belt to the World Championship over on Raw, where I think Batista won it from Triple H at the next Mania. Mm-hmm. So I would suspect that Triple H had it at that time. Or maybe Orton had it at that time.
It had just been vacated. On December 6th, 2004, and Triple H would win it on January 9th, 2005. Before
New Year's Revolution.
Before losing it to Batista the following WrestleMania.
Okay. Why was it vacated?
A double fall occurred, a triple threat match also involving Chris Benoit and Edge on Raw.
Look at how many Triple H's there are in that.
That's a lot.
That belt
in the span
lineage
of
right there.
3 years.
Triple H, HBK, Triple H, Goldberg, Triple H, Benoit, Orton, Triple H, vacated.
Triple H reigns,
Batista,
I know.
Batista, vacated, Kurt Angle, Rey Mysterio. Oh, Kurt Angle went over for the draft, I guess. Interesting. So anyways, yeah, crap pay-per-view.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. It really even wasn't, apart from a couple instances, all that interesting either.
No, it wasn't. I mean, that's sort of one of the things about when people say, oh, this is the worst pay-per-view. This is, it plays into what I've said before, in that you can have good wrestling, you can have bad wrestling, you just can't have boring wrestling.
Yes.
And that's the problem with like critiquing this stuff. It's like we had a couple of laughs critiquing this, but it's with the bad stuff and the good stuff, not with the boring stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, that leads us to next week, where we are going to one of three options.
Yes. Here. You have two options. What is third? Wrestling Classic. Move on.
I'm not going to do the Wrestling Classic.
Slamboree 2000.
No, I'm not going to do that either. Need a good hook. Both these have good hooks, kind of.
What are the hooks?
Well, WrestleMania 13 is Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah. That is not a good WrestleMania. Otherwise.
No, it's not, but it's probably really funny. But then there's a really amazing, there's a really, really good match. I want to revisit that match.
Yeah.
I want to revisit that
I remember match. The first time I watched it, it's so hyped as being so great that I remember watching it the first time and feeling like it was good.
Yeah. Because did we do Mania 13 as a book of the match on the regular show?
I don't think so.
Okay, because I thought I remember talking about this match. We probably did an account on it or something.
Yeah, we talked about it several
also,
times.
Also, so our options are WrestleMania 13. Sold out 1997. This was the NWO pay-per-view.
Oh, wow.
It's probably terrible.
I think I remember watching that.
So we've got good and bad. And then we've got all bad. And then I'm going to go with... Oh, okay. Here we go. This is what we're going to do. We are going to do...
Which one is this one?
NXT TakeOver... Revolution, December 11th, 2014. I'm going to give that as an option. See if anybody wants to get a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
We've got Kevin Owens versus Juice Robinson.
Yeah, CJ Parker. The Lucha Dragons.
Baron Corbin versus Ty Dillinger.
Yes, the Lucha Dragons versus the Vaudevillains. Finn Balor and Hideo Itami against the Ascension.
There you go.
Charlotte versus Sasha Banks.
There you go.
Sami Zayn versus Neville.
There you go.
This is the show that got me watching NXT.
It's either this one or... I don't remember if I watched this one or if I started the next one. Because I think the next one was Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. Mm-hmm. And I know I watched that one. Mm-hmm. So I think I started with that one. So those are your options. Your options are Sold Out 1997, WrestleMania 13, NXT TakeOver 2014. I'm sorry, NXT TakeOver
Revolution
2014. And the winner, as determined by the patrons, is Sold Out 1997.
It's awful.
It's good. It's good. All right. So now you have your homework for next weekend.
I got a show I got to watch while I'm on vacation.
I know. My goodness.
Not so much of a vacation after all.
Oh, yeah. When this goes up, you'll be on vacation.
When this video goes up, yes.
That's right. That's correct. Good. All right. Well, let us know what you guys think in the comments, as always. And until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.